Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry supplies the experts, and all you have to do is supply the questions to stump them. You may submit from 1 to 3 questions with the correct answers. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and perfectly unrehearsed, Information Please wends its merry way along. And tonight it calls upon 4 distinguished intellects to exert themselves in the answering of your questions. They are John Kieran, the sports authority with a practically hole-proof memory, Franklin P. Adams, better known as FPA, conductor of the famous Conning Tower in the New York Post, Christopher Morley, whom you met on this program a few weeks ago and whose charming novel, Kitty Foyle, appeared recently, and Marquis James, who has written many books in the field of American history, 2 of which, Lives of Andrew Jackson and Sam Houston, have won him Pulitzer Prizes. Now remember, for each question that is missed, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, gentlemen, suppose we start with a question from Herbert C. Anderson of Worcester, Massachusetts, which has to do with hobbies. I'm going to mention a number of terms, 4 of them, and each of these terms suggests a certain hobby. Name the hobby. You have to get 3 out of 4. Here's the first, F6.3. Mr. Moore.
Chess.
How do you explain that?
Faintest idea.
Happened to occur to you? No, I don't think it's
chess. Well, it suggested coordinates to me, and therefore a rectangular game like chess.
It's pretty involved, but you can't bluff me out of it. I don't think it is chess. Mr. Kieran?
I think it's amateur photography.
Yes, it is amateur photography.
That's a lens formula.
Yes, it represents what, would you say, Mr. Kieran?
A focal length in there, I believe.
Well, the size of the opening of the shutter and the amount of light passing through the lens. Well, I wish you'd come in first, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Morley was a noble guest, but it's not chess. I have to count you wrong on that. That means, gentlemen, you'll have to get the remaining 3. 11.5 perforations. What does that suggest to you? 11.5, Mr. Adams.
Postage stamp.
Postage stamp, yes. Stamp collecting. There's a number of perforations along the edge of the stamp. DX. DX suggests what? They're thinking hard, ladies and gentlemen, thinking hard, but with no visible result. Sorry, gentlemen. I'll give you 2 more seconds. 1, 2. DX suggests shortwave radio. It's a call sent out by amateur operators for someone a long distance away to pick up. 2 wrong out of 4. The next one I think you all ought to get, ALS, suggests what? And Mr. Morley?
Autograph collecting.
Yes, what
means autograph letter sign.
That's quite right. Retrieved yourself beautifully, Mr. Morley, but that does not, I'm afraid, get by, because we have to get 3 out of 4. We got only 2 out of 4. It means Mr. Anderson gets $10 for 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you. The next question from Eva McRae of San Jose, California. Now, here are some well-known lines of verse about some humble animals. I'll put them in the form of questions, and you answer the question. We have to get 3 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. 3 out of 3. If the lark's on the wing, which is a quotation, where is the snail? Mr. Kieran points.
The snail's on the thorn, Robert Browning.
Robert Browning. Want to let us have the whole quotation to clear that up?
The year's at the spring, the day's at the morn. Morning's at 7, the hill is dew-pearled. The lark's on the wing, the snail's on the thorn, God's in his heaven, all's right with the world.
Is there anyone else in America that could do that as quickly as Mr. Kieran?
Wonderful.
Perfect answer, Mr. Kieran. Perfect answer. At what time of day did the, quote, beetle wheel his droning flight, close quote? Mr. Morley.
At dusk.
At dusk. Do you think you'd possibly give us part of the quotation which would clear that up?
Well, it's a poem by Thomas Collins.
No, I don't think that's quite right. It's the same century, but it's a different poet. However, you did get the answer. It is dusk, Mr. Morley, and I'm going to count that as correct.
Collins, it's gray.
Yes, it is gray. That's right. Yeah. Well, if it isn't Collins, it's always gray. If it isn't gray, it's always Collins, Mr. Morley. And it's from what famous poem, Mr. Morley?
Elegy written in a country churchyard.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. That's quite right. Now fades the glimmering landscape on the sight, and all the air a solemn stillness holds, save where the beetle wheels his droning flight, and drowsy tinklings lull the distant folds. I believe third year high school, gentlemen. Third year high school. That's correct, Mr. Morley.
What? It isn't dusk, that's parting day.
Well, it's pretty near dusk. We won't split hairs over a half hour, Mr. Adams. What fought the dogs and killed the cats? Mr. Kieran had his hand up first. Mr. Morley did also.
They fought the dogs and killed the cats, made nests inside men's Sunday hats, broke open the kegs of salted sprats, and licked the soup from the cook's own ladles and so forth. Robert Browning, the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Kieran is an exceptional poem this evening. That's all I can do to prevent you, Mr. Kieran, from giving us the entire poem.
Very good.
Pages. It's a good poem. We're all right on that. Got every one of them. 3 out of 3. Thank you. And not a very easy question, if I may say so. The next question from M. Ryan in Detroit, Michigan, is about American presidents. I think it's a very interesting one. Name the American presidents who were storekeepers or clerks in the following towns. This is a from storekeeper to president question. The first town, we have to get 3 out of 4 on this, gentlemen. The first town is Clover Bottom. Mr. James. Andrew Jackson, you would say that as if it were too easy for you. Where is Clover Bottom?
Just outside of Nashville.
And with whom was Mr. Andrew Jackson in partnership?
He had different partners. A man named Coffey, a man named Hutchins.
Yeah.
And he had one more, Lewis.
Very good. He had 3 different partners at various times, and it was a general store. Very good, Mr. James. Mr. Adams is looking at Mr. James with admiration. Sorry, I can't televise the look on Mr. Adams' face. It ought to be preserved and waxed. Name the American president who was a storekeeper or a clerk in New Salem. In New Salem, Mr. Morley.
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. You don't know whom he was in partnership with, do you, Mr. Morley? That's a tough one. Mr. Adams knows.
Herndon.
I think not.
That was a law
practice, I think, Mr. Adams. But when Abe Lincoln was in partnership in this general store, it was with Mr. William Berry. Is that right, Mr. James? Well, it says so here. I dare you to contradict me. And New Salem, of course, Mr. Morley, is in what state?
Illinois.
Illinois. Now, name the American president who was a storekeeper in Galena. Mr. James again.
U.S. Grant.
U.S. Grant, yes. And what kind of store was it?
Just a country store.
Specializing in hardware and leather. Hardware and leather. What state is Galena?
Illinois.
Illinois, yes. And finally, Clinton. Clinton. Mr. James, you have your hand up?
I threw it right down. I was going to say Martin Van Buren.
No, I'm sorry.
That's Kinderhook.
It isn't Martin Van Buren. No, it was Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland.
Did you know that, Mr. Adams?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you say so? That's confounded modesty of yours, Mr. Adams.
Stephen Grover Cleveland.
What? I know, but that doesn't help now. It comes awfully late in the game. Still, we did get 3 out of 4 on that,
yes,
gentleman.
Middle name is Grover.
The next question coming from P. Frank of this city. Oh, here's one that'll take you back a long way. Mr. Adams is going to take you back a long, long way. The following characters used to live on the billboards. What products did they help to advertise? The first is Phoebe Snow. Oh, they all have their hands. Every one of them. Mr. Adams, I'm going to give you the chance to answer. I'm sure the others...
Lackawanna Railroad.
Yes, the Delaware, Lackawanna, and...
And Western.
And Western. And it's called... What was the nickname of the road?
The Road of Anthracite.
Thank you.
Phoebe Snow delights to go along the road to Buffalo. From morn to night, her dress is white upon the road of anthracite.
Did they make you memorize that when you were a child? I don't know how those things come to you, gentlemen. I can't understand
it. Just that here.
Marvelous. What character? There was a character named Sonny Jim.
Oh,
four hands again. None of you gentlemen remember anything that's happened to you in the last 10 years, apparently. Mr. Kieran.
Vega Venn, perfect trim. Force has made him Sonny Jim.
That a four, Mr. Kieran. And what is Force, Mr. Kieran?
It's a breakfast food.
It's a breakfast food. I remember it because I was forced to eat, about 6 boxes a week by my brother, who collected the coupons and eventually bought a bicycle for himself. Never forget that. The mayor of Spotless Town, Mr. Adams. Oh, they all have their hands up. Mr. Adams.
Sapolio.
Sapolio. You couldn't recite any Sapolio verse for us, could you, Mr. Adams?
Good for the spotter of Spotless Town, he spotted a spot on the butcher's gown. Would not be meat for justice's sake to roast the butcher at the stake. And so behind the bars he'll go. Bars of what?
Sapolio.
That was written by Mr. James K. Fraser of Westport, Connecticut.
What's his weight? I am simply struck dumb by the memory of your gentleman this evening. It's really remarkable.
That wasn't the one they said it works while you sleep, was it, right?
No, that was not.
That was not. Suppose we stop right
in
there.
In a word, it was not.
The next question coming from Richard H. Burney of Baltimore, Maryland. A much more dignified question, gentlemen. Name four works of literature, the titles of which contain mathematical terms, and you can't repeat the same mathematical term. For example, Leon Feuchtwanger, the German novelist, wrote a book called Power. And power is a mathematical term, isn't it, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, sir.
Let me have a few more, but I'll exclude numbers and fractions.
Ooh.
No numbers or fractions. Any other mathematical terms, whether from algebra, geometry, vector analysis, or what have you. They're thinking hard. Mr. Morley is moving around uneasily in his seat, but he tells me it's sciatica. Oh, we should be able to get four works of literature. Think of some mathematical terms. Mr. James?
Zane Grey wrote a book called The Circle C Ran.
That's perfectly all right. Why do you say it as if it were wrong? It's correct, Mr. James. Very good. That's one. Now, you can't use circle again, gentlemen.
Algebra all right?
Sure. That's
to be or not to be.
I'll take it, Mr. Adams. Although you pressed me hard, you pressed me hard. All right. Two more.
The Square Deal.
The Square Deal. Who wrote it, Mr. Morley?
Well, it was a line that was always quoted by T.R.
Yes, but I don't
square
think...
Square Deal or An Ancient Grudge.
Yes, but I don't think it was the name of a book. I may be mistaken. Probably we'll get 100 letters tomorrow pointing out the Square Deal was the name of the book. Mr. Kieran, do you have one?
Well, Berkeley Square was a book on...
That's a very good one. Very good. Berkeley Square, the famous play by John Balderson that was made into a very charming movie. That's three. Did you have one, Mr. Adams? Had your hand up.
No, the Square Deal was a book written by Stuart Chase.
The New Deal, I think. The New Deal.
The New Deal is right.
The New Deal.
I apologize.
Mr. Morley.
There was a burlesque of Euclid written by Simeon Strunsky called The Loves of the Triangles.
That's perfectly all right. Very good. What a memory you have, Mr. Morley. Do you know any useful information, Mr. Morley?
Not between...
I don't see why you flopped on that one. Seems to me it's as easy as rolling off a logarithm. Well, I think that's all we'll have time to do, gentlemen. Now, we seem to have lost, or rather come to dry, has lost $10. To those who have authored questions, too difficult for our experts, and there weren't very many of them. Now, Mr. Cross, I believe it's your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. In the heart of Canada's Northwest Territories, in the north arm of Great Slave Lake, lies a new gold mining village called Yellowknife. To this distant community, from time to time, Canada Dry ships a 26,000-pound carload of sparkling beverages. The total distance, thousands of miles northwest of Toronto, the original home of Canada Dry, is covered first by rail, then by barge, pack horse, and tractor. And a month later, the miners of Yellowknife enjoy their Canada Dry. But still farther north, as far as Otlavik, located in the frozen snows of the Arctic Circle, you will find Canada Dry bringing good cheer to the men of the Hudson's Bay Company. These men, accustomed to the more rigorous ways of living, have made sure they, too, can enjoy the distinctive flavor and tang of the champagne of ginger ales. Fortunately, we can buy Canada Dry ginger ale just around the corner, so there's no reason why your family, your friends, and your children cannot enjoy ginger ale at its very best. So, just as they do in the Arctic Circle and in all the best circles, ask for Canada Dry.
Mr. Cross, your interesting travelogue was timed in exactly 71 seconds. Now, gentlemen experts, we have lost so far only $10, plus, as you remember, 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Let's see whether you can do as well for the latter half of the program. Here's a question coming to us from Montreal from Mr. A.C. Hemaway. What common member of the animal kingdom, and here we mean anything that's not a plant, what common member of the animal kingdom begins life in the water but spends most of its life on land? Mr. Kieran had his hand up first.
Frog.
No, I don't think so. Now, I'm going to quarrel with you for the space of about 5 seconds and probably retire defeated. The typical frog has much more aquatic habits than that, I am told. Spends most of its life on land. Most of its life, Mr. Kieran. Yes, Mr. Kieran.
Mosquito.
The mosquito... No, I don't think that... do you think the mosquito spends most of its life on land?
Well, you don't think that when it starts to fly that it's any submarine, do you?
No, but I think you forget, Mr. Kieran, that there's another element besides land and water.
It's not an animal.
To wit, air. Now, you hold on, Mr. Kieran. We may come back to you. No, the proper answer would be... We have to get 2 out of 3 on this, by the way. The proper answer would be the toad, the typical toad. In the case of the toad, this is going to be very instructive. The eggs are laid in the water, where the young hatch, go through metamorphoses, and finally hop on shore where they live, except for return to water during the breeding season. By no means a dull life, Mr. Kieran. By no means a dull life. Have to count you wrong on that. Now, what common member of the animal kingdom begins life on land, but spends most of its life in the water? Mr. Kieran had his hand up. Mr. James had his hand up. Mr. James.
Turtle.
Yes, the ordinary water turtle or sea tortoise. That's quite correct. Now, what common member of the animal kingdom begins life in the water and spends all its life in the air? Think hard, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Morley. Mr. Morley.
The seagull.
The seagull. The very whimsical reply, Mr. Morley, but I doubt whether that's true. I don't know if the seagull...
Well, they brood on the charmed wave, some poet said.
I know, but they don't breed on the
charmed
wave. Now, the answer would be, Mr. Kieran...
My mosquito.
Yes, your mosquito, the sole and total property of Mr. Kieran. That's right. The eggs are laid in the water, and they hatch as larvae, and they emerge as adults, and they fly away. Return to water only to lay eggs. Oh, I think you got 2 out of 3 on that. Now, what can you do with this one, which comes from Carol M. Jenall of St. Paul, Minnesota? For me, this is one of the most interesting questions that I ask you, gentlemen. The following sentences are taken from famous American short stories, and each of the sentences ends in the title of the story. Is that clear? The experts are to complete each sentence, thus naming the short story. I consider this a really difficult question. Now, here is the first sentence. We have to get all on this, 3 out of 3. Quote, "And so I leave it all with you, which came out of the opened door." What is the last? Mr. Morley had his hand up first.
The lady or the tiger.
The lady or the tiger. That's quite right, Mr. Morley. Mr. Adams had his hand up, and I imagine Mr. Adams knew the answer, too. Very good. Famous story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Stockton. Now, here's another. These get progressively harder. Quote, "And now the poor creature is dead. It seems to me worthwhile to tell a little of his story by way of showing young Americans of today what it is to be..." Mr. Morley again.
A man without a country.
A man without a country. Mr. James had his hand up, too. Just a second later, you were going to answer the same way, Mr. James. I'm sure you were. By E.E. Hale, of course. Now, here is the third, last, and I think most difficult. "A child should be born hereabouts who was destined to become the greatest and noblest personage of his time, and whose countenance, in manhood, should bear an exact resemblance to..." Mr. Kieran.
The Great Stone Face.
That's right. Great Stone Face by Nathaniel Hawthorne. That's 3 out of 3. Mr. James had his hand up, too. Were you going to answer the Great Stone Face?
Was.
I compliment you. I really think that's a most difficult question and answered nobly by this group of scintillating intelligences. The next question from S. Dugan of Atlanta, Georgia. Identify these famous marches in American history. They all took place in the 19th century. You have to get 3 out of 3 on this. The first is a march of unemployed whose leaders were arrested for trespassing on a lawn. Leaders arrested for trespassing on a lawn, Mr. Kieran.
Well, I think that was Coxey's Army.
It was Coxey's Army. That's quite right. Marching on Washington. About when was that? Do you remember, Mr. Kieran? Mr. James?
93.
1893. Exactly correct, yes. Now, here's the second march. A march by people whose neighbors didn't approve of their ideas of matrimony. Mr. Kieran?
The Mormons.
The Mormons, yes. They were driven from
made
place
a trek
to place.
Out to Utah.
All the way out to Utah, yes. The third and last. A parade with canoes and log cabins on wheels drawn by horses. But, Mr. James?
That was the presidential campaign of 1840.
Yes, who were the candidates, Mr. James?
Harrison and Van Buren.
Yes, and what was the famous...
Tippecanoe and Tyler,
yes, too. Yes, Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. That's 3 out of 3. They're pretty good tonight. I can't seem to get the better of them. The next question from W. Murphy of Boston... Name 2 advantages that the offensive team has in professional football, which an amateur offensive team doesn't have. 2 advantages that the offensive team has in professional football that the amateur offensive team doesn't have. Mr. Kieran.
One advantage they have in kicking the goalposts are on the goal line in professional football. The second is that in professional football, a forward pass can be thrown anywhere from behind the line of scrimmage, whereas in... amateur football, it must be thrown by a man standing at least 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
That sounds perfectly exact to me. Very good. Those are 2 advantages.
They have arc lights, too.
Thank you, Mr. Morley. You find that's an advantage? All right. The next one from B. Post of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I think this, too, is a very interesting question. In what conspiracies in American history were the following people involved? In what conspiracies were the following people involved? The first, we have to get 2 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. Mrs. Mary E. Surratt. Mr. James.
Assassination of Abraham Lincoln, yes. Though that she was not involved in that, though she was hanged for it. She was involved in a plot to kidnap Lincoln, for which she was not tried.
Well, it must have been a great consolation for
any
her to be hanged, but not involved.
The evidence of the case will agree with me on that.
I believe that's quite right. Well, this is it's very nice of... Information, please, with the help of Canada Dry, to be able to clear the name at this late date of Mrs. Mary E. Surratt, who was hanged but not involved in the plot to assassinate Lincoln. Now the next, Harmon Blenner Hassett. Mr. James again. And Mr. Adams had his hand up, too.
The Burr conspiracy.
You want to tell us a little about that, Mr. James?
Well, no one knows much about it. Burr told so many stories, and you can just pay your money down and take your choice.
We have no time to put our money down this evening. Well, it was a conspiracy to establish what, in general?
Well, he was tried for a conspiracy to separate the South Mississippi Valley states from the Union.
Yes.
Treason.
And what...
he was not convicted.
No. And what was Blenner Hassett's role in this conspiracy?
Well, Blenner Hassett was an Irishman who had an island in the Ohio River, a kind of an island paradise, and Burr was raising money and went there and touched him for all he had.
That's true. And what did Blenner Hassett expect to get out of the conspiracy?
Darn if I know.
Well, it's... he expected to become the Duke of Texas.
I didn't know that.
Whatever that would turn out to be.
It's a musical comedy.
2 right so far. Now, the last is Thomas Conway. Thomas Conway. Mr. James again. He's a bear on this stuff. Mr. James.
Well, that was a cabal in which the Adamses of Massachusetts and the Lees of Virginia and Conway, an Irish adventurer, were all in cahoots to get Washington out of the commander-in-chiefship of the army.
Yes, to be superseded by whom?
Mr. Conway.
No, I think to be replaced...
His name? Lee. Charles Lee.
No, I think it was Gates, wasn't it? That's right. I think it is Gates. The reason that I think I'm not mistaken is because I have it down here on a card.
It was, yeah.
We got 3 out of 3 on that. You're marvelous on conspiracies, Mr. James. Marvelous. The next question, from Mrs. M. Gorton of Brownfield, Pennsylvania. What famous things were made, in part at least, of the following materials? You have to get 3 out of 3. What famous thing was made of oak that couldn't be split, nor bent, nor broke? Kieran had his hand up first.
The wonderful one-hoss shay.
That's right.
Who wrote Oliver it? Wendell Holmes.
Oliver Wendell Holmes, yes. Now, what famous thing was made of the bark of the birch, boughs of the cedar, and roots of the larch, Mr. Morley?
Hiawatha's shack.
No, not a shack.
Wigwam.
No. You're all right
canoe.
On Hiawatha. Ah, canoe, yes. Had to get that out of you with a corkscrew, Mr. Morley. What famous thing was made of baker's dough? Perhaps a famous character might be a better description. Baker's dough. Remember, Mr. Kieran? Mr. Adams? No, I don't think you know, gentlemen. This goes back even before Mr. Adams' time.
You mean the gingerbread boy?
Yes, the gingerbread boy. Why didn't you say that, Mr. Kieran? That's quite right. The gingerbread boy.
Eugene Field, you mean?
I don't know. No, I don't think anyone knows who wrote it. And I think you'll find it as a fairy tale in your first grade reader, Mr. Kieran.
He couldn't run until he got hot, and he couldn't get hot until he ran.
That's right.
The butterscotchman.
Well, that's not,
quite
that
right.
That was his brother.
That's the Johnny Cake.
Now you've got them all. Well, the man at the cash register tells me that Canada Dry has paid out a total of only $10 plus one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Our first question, too.
Yes. Yeah. You're almost perfect, gentlemen. Now, Mr. Cross, a word with you, and I'll be back with the lineup for next week.
Often on this program, we have told you that pinpoint carbonation is a scientifically developed process that creates millions of smaller bubbles, and one of the reasons for the longer life of sparkling Canada Dry water. Well, you may ask, what's the advantage of millions of smaller bubbles? What's that got to do with the long life of sparkling Canada Dry water? Well, the answer is this. First, the water is more thoroughly and consequently more perfectly carbonated. And secondly, the smaller the bubbles, the longer the club soda will stay fresh and lively. For actually, the bubbles you see rising from an open bottle of club soda is the carbonation escaping. And so the larger the escaping bubbles, the sooner the sparkle will disappear. That's the reason why millions of smaller bubbles, the result of pinpoint carbonation, make Canada Dry water the club soda with a 24-hour sparkle, a sparkle that makes your favorite drink taste better. Now, here's Mr. Fathom.
Mr. Morley and Mr. James, will you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for dropping in tonight and adding to your already high reputation? Next week, our triple threat combination will be on hand again, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams. And we have something extra special, we believe, in the way of a guest expert. This expert has probably shaken hands with more Americans than any other person of his time. And there isn't much he doesn't know about the game of politics, not to mention the game of post office. I announce as our guest of honor for next week, the Honorable James Farley. And here's something else special. Next week, Information Please is having its first birthday anniversary under the sponsorship of Canada Dry. So tune in and cut the cake with us, won't you? Now to all our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question. And if your question stumps the experts, you get another $10 and a complete set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So you can win this new prize in addition to $15. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Your neighborhood stores have Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water in convenient sizes for every occasion. The large family size is very economical, costing only 15 cents plus bottle deposit. And remember, too, you'll find Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling water at clubs, restaurants, hotels, and wherever fine beverages are sold. This is Milton Cross saying good night for Canada Dry until next week at this time.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.